Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the podcast, Dan Novak is here to tell us about a grandmother who is enjoying life again thanks to a video game. Then, Ana Mateo is here for this week's Words and Their Stories. Finally, Katie tells us about the presidency of Donald Trump. But first, the Higher Education Report. Harvard University's Claudine Gay recently became the second Ivy League president to step down under pressure from alumni, political activists, and supporters of the university. Gay was the first Black president of Harvard and second woman to lead the university. She started the job only 6 months ago. Gay and two other presidents were widely criticized after making controversial comments to the U.S. Congress in December. Gay, along with Sally Kornbluth of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Liz McGill of the University of Pennsylvania, were called to Washington to discuss American lawmakers' concerns about anti-Semitism on college campuses. Anti-Semitism is the hatred of Jewish people. The U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Education chose the presidents because their schools had been at the center of the rise in anti-Semitic protests, a committee spokesperson said in a statement. The protests were related to the ongoing conflict between Israel and Hamas. Harvard graduate Elise Stefanik of New York is part of the Republican-led committee. She asked each university leader about how their school would react to calls to kill large numbers of Jews, something described as genocide. Stefanik asked McGill, "Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?" Penn is the University of Pennsylvania, a member of the Ivy League. She asked the same question of Gay and Kornbluth.
None of the school leaders were able to clearly say calling for the death of Jews violated school rules. The presidents were sharply criticized for their lack of clarity. Within a few days, influential members of the University of Pennsylvania community pushed McGill to resign. For a time, it looked as if Gay's job was safe. She received support from some notable professors at Harvard, including legal scholar Lawrence Tribe. Tribe said it is dangerous for universities to be bullied into micromanaging their policies. He was talking about the way some activists and politicians seemed to be pushing the universities toward their preferred result. One of those activists is Christopher Rufo. Rufo is a member of the leadership group that oversees New College of Florida. With the support of Governor Ron DeSantis, Rufo and others have been pushing the small college to change its curriculum. After Gay announced her resignation on January 2nd, Rufo wrote words of celebration on X, formerly known as Twitter. He and other conservatives believe American higher education has too many liberal people in leadership roles. Gay's position at Harvard looked safe in December. So what changed? In the weeks following the congressional hearing, Some critics charged Gay with using duplicative language in academic writing. To duplicate means to make an exact copy of something. They also said Gay had plagiarized or claimed others' writing as her own. The charges, however, did not come from those working in higher education. They came from people like Rufo, who are working to push out higher education leaders they do not agree with.
At first, Harvard said it did not consider Gay's work to be intentional or reckless, but pressure continued. Many observers believe the conservative activists felt Gay only received Harvard's presidency because she was a black woman. On X, Rufo wrote that he was establishing a plagiarism hunting fund as a way to oust university leaders and bring attention to the rot in the Ivy League. Gay wrote a letter to the Harvard community announcing she was leaving her position with a heavy heart. She also said it was frightening to be attacked due to her race. Gay said she would remain at Harvard as a professor. Academic experts who have been following the pressure campaign on Gay say the plagiarism accusations only came after it looked like she would not lose her job. They worry that people who do not like the leaders of major American universities will now research their academic writing in search of duplications and poor citations. Devarian Baldwin is a historian at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. He writes about race and higher education. Baldwin said Gay made mistakes in her writing and noted that anti-plagiarism software will make it easy for critics to find problematic writing by college leaders and professors. The tools are designed to help educators learn whether their students' writings are their own. But Baldwin said the tools can be dangerous if they fall into the hands of people who want to argue that academia is full of corrupt and incompetent people. Incompetent means someone lacks the ability to do something well. Irene Mulvey is president of the American Association of University Professors. She said, plagiarism investigations could be weaponized to push out presidents. She said she is concerned that conservative activists will use the successful campaign against Gay as a method to push out other academic leaders. For presidents to be taken down like this, it does not bode well for academic freedom, she said. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Gina Bennett.
Few players of the online video game Free Fire know that one of their top opponents is an 81-year-old grandmother from rural Chile. From her professional gaming chair at home in a small village, Maria Elena Arevalo becomes a hunter. She shoots down opponents in a game in which tens of millions of players fight to survive on an imaginary island. Arevalo does not look like her online character, Mommy Nena. That is the nickname she got from her only grandson, Hector Carrasco, who was 20. It was Carrasco who introduced Arevalo to the digital world of gaming. It has given her a new excitement for life after falling into deep loneliness following the death of her husband of 56 years in 2020. I didn't even know what a mouse was, she told AFP at her home in the town of Yai Yai in central Chile. Afterwards, I got excited. We started to play whenever Carrasco could. I felt better because I didn't think so much about my late husband anymore. At first, I didn't want to hurt anyone, she added, but with time, she grew more competitive. Today, Arevalo plays at the heroic level. That is just one level below the highest Grandmaster level, which only 300 players compete in. She has 4 million followers on social media service TikTok, and 650,000 on YouTube, where she shares tips with fellow players. Last year, she visited Mexico City as a Free Fire ambassador for the game's anniversary celebrations. The cost-free trip was her first outside of Chile. All the kids asked me for autographs. It was beautiful. The day I die, I'll take that with me, she said. Earlier this month, Arevalo was named one of Chile's 100 most important older people by the El Mercurio newspaper and the Catholic University for helping break down age stereotypes. It's totally cool, and I feel like she's my best friend, Carrasco said of his famous grandmother. 3 years after starting to play Free Fire, Arevalo said she no longer feels lonely. But a recent study found that nearly half of people over 80 in Chile say they feel lonely. Older people are finding comfort in gaming. For example, a Ukrainian team known as Young Guard are strong Counter-Strike competitors. A 93-year-old Japanese named Hamako Mori is thought to be the oldest gamer in the world. She is also known by her alias Gamer Grandma. For Arevalo, gaming is becoming harder for her because of a worsening skin condition. But she is not planning to slow down. I love doing this. I'll keep going as far as I can, she said. I'm Dan Novak.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Today, let's talk about a common art activity, coloring. Coloring books are common objects of play and learning for children around the world. In recent years, coloring books for adults have grown popular too. Children usually color with wax sticks called crayons. But you can also use color markers, pens, and pencils. Adding color to black and white images is fun and often calming. You just choose a color and fill in the space created by the lines. In fact, children are often taught to stay inside the lines when they color. Apparently, this idea does not come naturally. Child development experts say very young children begin by scribbling on a coloring page. They do not pay attention to the lines of the picture. The result is a colorful but often messy-looking picture. Then, between the ages of 2 and 5, they start coloring inside the lines. This progression shows an improvement in many skills: fine motor skills, hand-eye coordination, space and object awareness, and more. Many children are taught to color inside the lines. As a result, many adults do the same. This makes the finished artwork look more organized and proper, because you followed the image's guide lines. That is why the expression, coloring inside the lines, means to think or act within generally accepted guidelines. If you color inside the lines, you follow the rules. You stay in the lines, or you play by the book. Not the coloring book, but the rule book. You can also say you stick to the script. A script contains the spoken words, performers must say out loud in a play, movie, or show. Sticking to the script means you do not change the lines you are given. Such people can also be said to toe the line. That expression comes from foot racing. On the other hand, people who color outside the lines do not follow rules. They are rebels. Rebels reject rules. They color outside the lines and think outside the box. Instead of sticking to the script, they go off script. They improvise. Just as with rule followers, we have many word phrases and expressions for rule breakers. They break new ground. They are groundbreakers. They buck traditions. Used as a verb this way, buck means to oppose or resist. Next time you want to describe these two kinds of people, you will have plenty of expressions to choose from. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. We just heard Anna Mateo talk about following rules. Anna, can you remind our listeners about how you approached the subject?
Sure, Dan. This week, I talked about the expression coloring inside the lines. That is a way to talk about following rules or guidelines.
Anna, what are some of the other ways that people talk about following rules?
Well, if you like sports, you can use the expression to toe the line. That comes from foot racing. If someone is talking about being a good rule follower, but they want to use a text expression, they can say that person sticks to the script.
Maybe that would apply to recording something like a podcast, right?
It very well could. We write a script. Sometimes we stick to the script, and sometimes we go off the script.
We get inspired to color outside the lines, Anna.
Exactly. You want to add something. You want to improvise. That is a word that I used in my story.
Anna, you are one of the best improvisers I know. How do you think you gained that skill?
I actually had an improvisational comedy class many, many years ago. I think everyone should take a class like that because it teaches you to stay on the subject, but talk around it, to expand on it without leaving it completely.
Well, we mentioned toeing the line, but if you're good at improv, you can stay on your toes in case you have to react to something you're not expecting.
Very good improv from you, Dan. So just so our listeners know, improv is a shortened way to say improvisational or to improvise.
Now, Anna, when you and I are doing the podcast, I usually try to keep it moving along. So I'm the one who toes the line. We just want to mention how that saying came to be, and it's from running races, right? At the beginning of time, when people were trying to decide who was the fastest runner among a group of runners, maybe they would draw a line in the sand. That's something that we've talked about in Words and Their Stories before. Draw a line in the sand, and everybody steps up to the line, and nobody should get an advantage and put their toe over the line. So I think that's where this phrase toeing the line and following the rules comes from. Does that sound about right?
That's right, Dan. Runners do not want to have other runners to have an unfair start. So they toe the line. They put their toe up to that line. And that way everyone starts at the same place for the race. But I think it is okay some of the time to not toe the line, to go off script, or to break the mold. Those are other ways to say that you're doing something a little differently. You are thinking outside the box. Sometimes that is how great advances are made.
Maybe you have a story about some of your own outside of the box thinking.
During COVID, all of us had to work from home. Now, if you are writing at a computer, that is very adaptable to working from home. But what about making video programs? What about production in a studio? Those things had to change. We had to think outside the box.
That's a good example, Anna. We wouldn't have had all of the great learning English videos without some good thinking from you and our colleagues. So what's one thing everybody did, or one thing you did, to make sure these videos stayed in production during the time that people couldn't work together in the studio?
I personally like to shoot outdoors. The lighting is good. People do not expect a studio-like quality. So I leaned into that. That means that's my strength. I thought outside the box, and I used the outdoors to do my shooting. Even today, COVID is over. We're working back in the studios and at home, both. But I still like to go outside with my camera and take some video. It gives me new ideas and helps me think outside the box. So I'm keeping that part.
The only problem about outdoor outside the box thinking is when you have loud traffic noises like car horns or a train going by or maybe a noisy bird. But other than that, it sounds really good. Well, thanks, Anna, for telling us about your out of the box thinking today.
You're welcome, Dan. Thanks for having me.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today, we are talking about Donald Trump, the 45th U.S. president. He was elected in 2016. Because his presidency is so new, this program will not discuss his time in office. Instead, it will discuss his early life. And it will note a few ways that Trump's background is unusual compared to most U.S. presidents. Donald Trump was born in Queens, a borough of New York City. He was the fourth child. He had two brothers and two sisters. His mother had been born in Scotland. His father, whose relatives were German, became a successful businessman in New York. Donald and his two brothers helped their father in the family business. At the time, the business was called Elizabeth Trump and Son, after his grandmother and father. The work related to building, buying, and managing property. By his own telling, young Donald often created trouble in school. So, when he was 13 years old, his parents sent him to a military-style school. Donald said that, for the most part, he enjoyed the experience. Other students there remembered him as a good baseball player, as popular with girls, and as someone who wanted to succeed. Trump went on to college, first at Fordham University in New York, and then at the University of Pennsylvania. He earned a degree in economics. He was also already investing in real estate. After he graduated, Trump quickly returned to New York City and his career. In time, he became the head of the family business. He renamed it the Trump Organization. As its president, Trump developed and put his name on luxury buildings, casinos, hotels, and golf courses around the world. Later, he became linked to the entertainment industry, too. He became a part owner of beauty pageants, hosted a television show, and wrote a book about how to succeed in business. During those years, Trump also married 3 times and divorced 2x. The media wrote especially about his 1st and 2nd marriages, because he openly had a relationship with his 2nd wife while he was married to his 1st. In 2005, he married Melania Knaus, a former model from Slovenia. She is only the 2nd First Lady who was not born in the United States. The first was Louisa Adams, who came from Britain in 1801. Altogether, Trump has 3 sons and 2 daughters. Because Trump has been a public figure for most of his life, many Americans were familiar with him before he ran for president. To some, he is linked to success in business and branding. To others, notes journalist Jackie Combs, he is linked to debt and legal battles. But until he officially entered the 2016 campaign as a Republican candidate, few linked him to politics. Trump is unusual among past presidents in that he had never worked in the government before. Nor has Trump served in the military. Only Presidents Taylor, Grant, and Eisenhower had no past government experience. However, they had all been generals. During the campaign for president, other candidates spent money to buy advertising. But Trump spread his message on free television, radio, and social media. Trump won the Republican nomination over 16 candidates. He went on to defeat Democratic Party nominee Hillary Clinton to win the presidency. Trump was 70 years old when he was sworn in. Trump was unusual in how he communicated with the public. As a president, he continued to use Twitter, now known as X, to communicate his thoughts directly to anyone who wanted to follow him. Many earlier presidents also used changes in technology to interact with the public. Woodrow Wilson was the first to hold press conferences regularly with reporters. Franklin Roosevelt famously spoke to Americans on the radio. John F. Kennedy and later Richard Nixon are credited with using television to their advantage. While the long-term effects of Trump's presidency are not yet known, he will likely be remembered in part for his direct and unscripted style of communication. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's the Learning English podcast for today. Thank you, Katie, for that report. And thanks to our VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.